Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
On yesterday's show, we spent a good bit of time talking about the Georgia defensive line, the edge rushers, John Stinscombe's belief that that's the most interesting thing to watch for on G-Day on Saturday. And that is, in some respects, kind of a continuation of a little bit of a theme for us during the offseason, which is that if you want to really guarantee your best chance at competing for a national championship, if you're Georgia here this year, best chance to do that might be upgrading the performance of, if you just want to call it your front seven, that's fine, but it's sort of like defensive line plus edge rushing outside linebackers. Getting more elite play from that group might be the most important thing for Georgia to do to really guarantee itself the best chance of competing for a national championship again. And one of the things that makes that conversation so intriguing are all the potential names who could make all of that just so much more likely. We talked about Damon Wilson yesterday and all that kind of stuff. And I feel pretty confident that we kind of are at least zeroing in on the right discussion when we're doing those kinds of things. But what I find to be kind of fascinating is, while I believe our talk yesterday probably reflects the feelings of the fan base within the bubble of Dog Nation and those who are probably watching Georgia most closely, I do think it's really interesting. The more you kind of pull back from, like, say, 10,000 feet outside the bubble, so to speak, of Dog Nation, the more it's a different position group that seems to have people talking all the time. There are, like, some sure things, some known commodities around Georgia. Obviously, everybody by now sort of feels like they know what Carson Beck brings to the table, and that's generated plenty of discussion. But anytime the sort of unknowns around Georgia come up, biggest question marks, best spring position battles, and all those kinds of things, it's another position group that seems to get talked up over and over and over again. And this is true as well here on this Friday, final day before G-Day tomorrow. Once again, there is a position group for Georgia where admittedly the competition is pretty fierce and intense that is just sort of heavy on the minds of a lot of national writer, national media types, and probably getting the biggest spotlight right now of almost anything else compared to any other position group for this Georgia program at the moment. I'm talking about the Georgia defensive secondary. The latest example of this after ESPN has had its turn and others have had their turn, a writer named Chip Patterson for CBSSports.com looking at the sort of best position battles, most competitive, you know, jockeys for playing time around college football ahead of some big spring games coming up on Saturday. And for Georgia, it is the defensive secondary that gets mentioned. I want to show you this on the screen. I'm going to read what Chip had to say about the Georgia defensive backs. He says names to know here: Daylon Everett, Daniel Harris, Ellis Robinson, Dan Jackson, Janelle Aguero, K.J. Bolden, and of course others. Chip goes on to write in this story about these position battles to watch during spring games: Javon Buller, Tyke Smith, and Kamari Laster are all off to the NFL, creating a fascinating battle as the Bulldogs shuffle pieces at cornerback, safety, and Georgia's star position. Chip says that Daylon Everett started every game at corner opposite Kamari Laster a year ago, solidifying at least one spot in the secondary. Let's pause on that for a moment. Are we sure that's true? Are we sure that Daylon Everett is a solid, you know, essentially guaranteed starter at one spot in the cornerback situation for Georgia? Maybe, maybe not. Put a pin in that for now. Chip goes on to write, after that, it's going to depend on competition and development. Julian Humphrey briefly entered the portal but stuck with the team. He's hoping for a bounce-back season after battling injuries last year. Sophomore Daniel Harris offers good speed and length, and five-star early enrollee Ellis Robinson has drawn praise despite his need for more time in a college strength and conditioning program. So that's the sort of blueprint kind of, you know, put on display there by Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, that of all the teams in the country that have big aspirations the upcoming year and all the position groups for those teams, the Georgia defensive secondary, one of the most interesting competitions right now. And I think I would say back to Chip, actually, it might be even more interesting than you realize. Even if we think overall what's happening for the defensive line and what's happening at edge rusher are perhaps more important for Georgia's championship hopes, we don't deny that the competition at defensive secondary is intense. It could have massive ramifications, and we'll get to all of that, obviously, over the course of today's show and throughout the next few days. And as I said, maybe even more competitive than Chip realizes in the piece that he wrote there for CBSSports.com, because while Dalen Everett does have the experience, you know, guys like Harris and Humphrey, their decision not to transfer and remain at Georgia has drawn, I think, pretty positive reviews thus far this spring. And Georgia kind of knows, with the transfer portal opening up on April 15th, let's just be real and honest here for a moment, that for guys who've kind of had a little bit of a wandering eye, or we had suspicions they had a little bit of a wandering eye, making sure they know that the opportunity for playing time exists for them in the summer, that's probably pretty valuable for Georgia. And frankly, just given what we think that Harris is, what we think that Humphrey can be, a guy like Everett saying, you're a guaranteed starter right now, you've got this starting position on lock, boy, you'd have to be pretty good for the spring overall, and G-Day in particular, to really have that said about you, knowing how competitive it could be with guys like Humphrey and Harris, and just how much of an opportunity any Georgia player could perhaps have to go elsewhere if things don't, you know, quite work out. So from that standpoint, the defensive secondary is fascinating, and we do get a chance to see this for ourselves with G-Day coming up tomorrow. So with that in mind, it was interesting to hear a few days ago from the one Georgia starter that we know in the secondary. That's the safety Malachi Starks. Starks is one of the very best players in all of college football, regardless of position. He's also injured and not going to play tomorrow and has not really been going through the reps during spring practice here either, but he's watching very closely. He's also a smart football player, so when he watches, he knows what he's looking at. And so he was asked, when he met with reporters just the other day, kind of like the final moment of kind of hearing from Georgia officially before G-Day on Saturday, he was asked what a successful day for the Georgia secondary would be on G-Day tomorrow. This is what Malachi Starks said a couple of days ago about, you know, kind of what he wants to see from his position group, the secondary, during the G-Day scrimmage. This is Malachi Starks.
Just going out there and compete, you know, everybody being on the same page, just seeing guys wanted to know what the job is and how to get it done, and just going out there and compete, because, you know, like I like to say, we play the hardest position on the field. You know, we're going to get up the ball time to time, but it's always about the next play. So, I mean, it's going to happen, but I want to see guys, when it does happen, how do they respond? So I think that would say a lot about the room that we have.
So I have joked a little bit that sometimes I don't really feel like I'm really good at watching the defense on G-Day. And obviously during the season, you know, I enjoy watching the Georgia defense every bit as much as I like watching the Georgia offense. In fact, if you're going to go back to 2021, I was sort of thinking about this at the time. You know how, like, sometimes there's that moment where you sort of feel like you need to just run to the bathroom or go get yourself something to drink or something like that. And maybe some teams in some years, when the defense was on the field, if you had to get up during the game, that's the time you're getting up. But when Georgia was playing defense in 2021, there's no way you're missing that. That's the show. That was the thing to watch. Of course, you enjoy watching Georgia defense during the season. But on G-Day, sometimes I have to admit, you know, perhaps, you know, it's just whatever. It's just true that I have a tendency to sort of fixate on the offensive guys a little bit more, you know, during a G-Day performance. It sort of feels like it's a showcase for the offense more so than the defense. We've kind of given you all the explanations and reasons why perhaps that's true. That's something we've certainly talked plenty about. But as Stark said, hey, this is going to be a competitive environment on Saturday. And Stark says, I want my fellow guys in this position group to be able to run step for step for all these wide receivers who've generated all this conversation. We've talked about Colby Young. We've talked about, you know, Arian Smith. We've talked about Dylan Bell. We've talked about all of those names all spring long. And I think there is some genuine fascination with what they might be able to do coming up on Saturday. But as Malachi points out, how competitive is the defensive secondary in terms of limiting their pass-catching opportunities? And it may create a situation where there are fewer highlight plays and there's less sort of, you know, exciting moments. But if the defensive secondary is running step for step and knocking balls out of the air, that's probably a pretty good day for a position group that Chip Patterson, CBS Sports, says is going to be one of the most closely watched of any group in the country for these spring games coming up here this weekend. And for Georgia fans in general who kind of want to see, you know, what is the pecking order? How established is Dalen Everett, or is his job up for grabs too? And Julian Humphrey, Daniel Harris, their decision to forego the transfer portal and come back to Georgia, how much of a dividend does that have a chance to play for UGA? That makes, I would say, G-Day really fun on Saturday. And then there's also this. What about KJ Bolden? I mean, we've heard a lot about him at that safety spot, as you would think you should when a guy's a former five-star. And what about Ellis Robinson? I mean, it was Terrence Edwards himself who said that Ellis Robinson made an interception at the practice he attended that looked like something that Champ Bailey would have done. And there is a degree to which, even for newcomers who are trying to get strong like they need to and try to learn everything they need to learn, there is still a level of certain kinds of talent can't be hidden. And certain kinds of talent can't be ignored. And certain levels of talent overcome inexperience and size deficiencies or whatever else. There is just a moment when you have to say, this talent must be respected. And this is a guy who may skip the line and earn some playing time as a young guy that we don't always expect freshmen to get. Is KJ Bolden, Ellis Robinson, guys like that, are they those type of players? Well, once again, Saturday provides us a little bit of a glimpse to be able to see that. And if you want to go back to Malachi Starks for a moment, who himself was one of those freshmen a couple of years ago, Malachi also talked about what it takes to be a freshman like KJ is, like Ellis Robinson is, who might have a chance to kind of do what Malachi Starks did as a freshman during the 2022 season. This is what Malachi Starks had to say about that.
You gotta know the defense. You don't have to know it perfect. You don't gotta be a master of the defense, but you have to know what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and you also have to have effort. People gotta be able to kill me. Like, if I can look over there and know what you're gonna do, and I can kill you and do your job, and you can play. And that goes not just for freshmen, but anybody in the room. If you can be accountable and you have effort, then you'll play defense also.
So, I think there's a way to watch this on Saturday, right? Because, I mean, ultimately, in terms of what was the coverage responsibility, what were they supposed to do, to be honest with you, I don't always know that. I have my guesses and my suspicions, but I'm not always right. I certainly acknowledge that. But the two things we can all sort of judge. We can all sort of judge how somebody, when they're in man coverage, something like that, how somebody's running, you know, step for step with the receiver that they're covering. But also watch this. Watch what the coaches do. Watch what, you know, Dante Williams does. Watch what Traverse Robinson does. Watch what Kirby himself does, because Kirby certainly feels free to get involved in all of the position groups, maybe a little extra sometimes with that Georgia defensive secondary. Watch how hard they might be coaching guys like KJ or Ellis during the game, or even guys like Harris and Humphrey and Everett and all those. Sometimes it's the level of sort of very, very intense coaching those guys are getting that gives you a little bit of an idea of how you think they might be playing in a given moment. As far as what I'm hoping to see from G-Day, I sort of said this during our R.S. Enders cooldown yesterday. You know, we've seen, like, say, the last year or so, Georgia use its offensive line, for instance, as a position where there was a lot of rotating going on, that Georgia probably felt like it had more than five starter-level players, to use a phrase that Smart uses a lot, players playing above the line. I think Georgia felt like it had more than five of those guys playing above the line. Therefore, it tried to create as many opportunities as it could for as many of those players as possible, and I think it kept more Georgia players happy in the process. I'm sort of hopeful the same thing can be true for the Georgia defensive secondary there as well. If things are working out as well as I think they might be, that means that not only do you trust Daylon Everett, and you obviously trust Malachi Starks, but you may trust Julian Humphrey and Daniel Harris too. You may trust Ja'Cory Thomas. You may trust KJ Bolden. You may trust Dan Jackson. You may trust a good number of players even beyond the ones that I just mentioned. You may trust a good number of players to be above the line for you and a starter-level player for perhaps a different kind of program. So does Georgia gain the confidence to perhaps also work on a little bit of a defensive back rotation for the fall? And can enough playing time be shown available to keep a lot of these guys happy in this position group there as well? That's one of the things, admittedly, that I'm watching for on Saturday. If you ask me about my biggest concern for Georgia overall, I still sort of gravitate to the defensive front. But I certainly understand why so many of the national media, including the writer for CBS Sports, looks at the Georgia secondary. There is a long list of names who could be major contributors for Georgia. And exactly what the pecking order is for that group, Saturday G-Day, we get a pretty good glimpse of all of that. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. We are happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video across all platforms at 10 a.m., always a lot of fun to be doing that with your radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast, including posting the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. Really, really happy to have you as a part of the program, and so thankful to have our friends at Kroger as a part of the program, too. I want to give you a big announcement here from Kroger. We've talked before about their membership opportunity. It's called Kroger Boost, and Kroger Boost is a great way to, you know, save money at the fuel pump. You get twice the fuel points for every dollar you spend there at Kroger. It's also a great way to enjoy free grocery delivery. A lot of really good things come your way because of Kroger Boost. Or for now, you can also try it for free for 30 days there as well. You can save up to $1,000 a year when you earn those two times the fuel points and you get the free grocery delivery. So that's big savings, big opportunity, and they're going to give you a nice taste of that to try for free for 30 days. So I want you to go to Kroger.com/boost for more on that. One more time, Kroger.com/boost to find out about how you can save and experience Kroger Boost on kind of a short-term basis and find out what a great membership model that is and then be a part of that there coming up. Really, really good stuff. Kroger.com/boost for more on that. Let me also give a shout out here to tomorrow. Looking forward to being back at the UGA bookstore again. By the way, the great-looking apparel that the UGA bookstore is so famous for, they got special savings on all of that tomorrow. So make sure you stop by and enjoy that. Some of the national championship gear, my understanding is they're offering some really pretty big markdowns and a lot of that. So make sure you check that out. We'll be there before the game for the Dog Nation pregame show. Kaylee Manziel anchoring that. I, of course, as I always am, will be there for the Dog Nation postgame show after the game. That means, well, we haven't done this in a little while, but it's a reminder to you. It's show up to the UGA bookstore. If you want to kind of sound off on what you saw for G-Day, we'll give you a chance to do that. You can pop on air with us for a couple of minutes. If you want to join us via Zoom, we kind of tried that out yesterday to make sure that was all working good still, and it is. So we'll have a chance to welcome you to the program there on that. So you can sound off, typical Dog Nation postgame show. I really lean on y'all to help bring the energy for something like this. So we'll do all of that from the UGA bookstore tomorrow, our home away from home. And don't forget, also big autograph opportunities there tomorrow there as well. You've got the great former national championship quarterback, Buck Ballew. He'll be there signing copies of his book, I should say. And then Kamari Laster, who's going to be one of the stars of the upcoming NFL draft. How about Kamari Laster on hand tomorrow there as well? All of that going on from 10:30 in the morning until 12:30 p.m., kind of leading up to the start of G-Day there at 1 p.m. We'll be there for that there too. And then back after the game for the Dog Nation postgame show there as well. So stop by the UGA bookstore tomorrow. See Dog Nation. See Kamari Laster. See Buck Ballew. I'm led to believe, going to be a special guest on hand there as well. Maybe even a handful of special guests. So all of that should be a lot of fun. All right, we're going to get Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. But as a way of setting up our conversation with Jeff, let's also go around the doghouse right now. Here, poured today by the Finnish Long Drink, and I want to kind of lay the groundwork for what we're about to talk about with Jeff here in a moment, because Jeff had a great story at DogNation.com yesterday looking at what is a fast-growing visitor list for recruits on hand at G-Day in Sanford, say, between the hedges. Now, it's a little bit of a different experience for fans tomorrow because only part of the stadium is going to be open and pretty much everybody's sort of sitting on the kind of student side. Sometimes you call it the visitor side of the stadium. But recruits in that West End Zone facility, they'll still have the same kind of red carpet treatment they're used to getting. As far as the list overall, it is a long and impressive one. There are big names in the class of 2026, of course, such as quarterback commit Jerry Curtis. But as I show you this on the screen, there are a couple of names in particular I want to highlight here. One of those is Justice Terry. Terry, obviously, the recent flip from UGA to USC. A lot of folks sort of believe that this one's far from done, of course. And when you think about the home field advantage Georgia's trying to lean on from a recruiting standpoint, this is an example of that. Manchester, not exactly right next door to Athens, but also not that hard to kind of get over on campus here. And Terry's already, I think, visited Georgia since decommitting and committing to USC and now back on campus there again. So even in the NIL age, follow the visit still matters. And that's the old mantra. And Terry visiting Georgia again on Saturday, I think that at least means something. It may not be a guarantee of anything, but at least means something good for the Dogs. The other name that's interesting to me, I'm going to talk to Jeff Sintel more about this in particular, because I still believe that fans are not talking enough yet about a guy that I believe we'll all be talking a lot more about over the course of the next few months. That's Elias Williams, the four-star tight end from Camden County. Now, there are two things about Williams. Thing number one is, this is a very contested recruitment. I believe Jeff would probably say the most contested of all of the current UGA commits, I believe. He might say that anyway. But it's also one of those guys that I think as more fans kind of acquaint themselves, with the 2025 prospects. I think that Williams is going to have a certain level of fascination grow around him because, you know, he's certainly not as big as Darnell Washington, but he kind of reminds me a little bit of Darnell just in terms of the overall size and obviously athleticism for that size. And so I do believe this is a pretty important recruitment for Georgia. There are other names there as well. I'll shout out a couple of commits, Mason Short, Ethan Barbour. They're all planning on being there. And then, of course, you start getting a little bit into the 2026s, and some of those battles are going to kind of take shape here too. So we're going to cover a lot of that with Jeff Sintel coming up in a moment, but wanted to give you a little bit of a preview of that there. Watch out for Justice Terry. Watch out for Elias Williams. Watch for some of these names here perhaps making big headlines as they're expected to attend G-Day there on Saturday. For now, though, we'll make that Around the Doghouse. Poured today by the Finnish Long Drink. And, of course, tomorrow, a little bit of a makeshift tailgate opportunity for many of you. And when you're getting the cooler out for the tailgate, make sure you put the Finnish Long Drink in that cooler for the tailgate, especially here in the Peach State. Maybe thinking about the events going on in Augusta or something like that. But the peach-flavored version of the Finnish Long Drink is you're sitting there and you got the app open. You're watching all the golf from just down the road. You're getting ready to watch G-Day. The Finnish Long Drink goes great with that, whether it is the peach flavor or the one that I like, the traditional in the blue can with the grapefruit flavor and the gin kick. I know our good friend Kaylee Manziel, she's lately been on a Long Drink cranberry kick. A lot of the folks in my neighborhood like that there as well. Long Drink strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume, Long Drink zero, no carbs, no sugar. There is a Finnish Long Drink variety for you. It is a great tasting mixed drink. You like mixed drinks? This is a mixed drink. You don't have to mix yourself. It is a ready-to-drink cocktail. And in this really fun category of beverage, we think that the Finnish Long Drink really dominates it from a flavor standpoint. So make sure you try some today. Online, thelongdrink.com. That's the website, thelongdrink.com. You can enjoy all of that here today. Great to have the Finnish Long Drink pouring around the doghouse for us today. Now, normally, this is a little inside baseball. When we are getting ready to kind of make a transition with guests or something like that, I don't see the guests until they kind of show up on the screen. But because we had the Masters app running here on one of our monitors a little earlier, I actually have a little bit of a preview of Jeff Sintel. And Jeff's got a very nice background in honor of the festivities this weekend outside of what's happening for G-Day. So for those of you on video, you get a little bit of a treat around that. But for those of you listening, radio, podcast, everything else, what you really come for is the recruiting information that Jeff provides. So let's dive into that without further ado and get everything we need to know about all the top prospects on hand for the Georgia Spring Game tomorrow, known as G-Day. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let us say hello to Jeff Sintel. He has got his Augusta National background. You see Amen Corner right there behind him, and hopefully conjuring up a few amens from our gallery here today with some of the recruiting talk we're going to have here. And Jeff, let's just kind of dive into this, if you don't mind, on some of the recruits that, based on what you reported at DogNation.com, who we are expecting to see tomorrow. How much of a home field advantage is it for Georgia getting Terry back on campus again? And, you know, if I'm out there in L.A. and I'm bragging about, you know, what I think my, NIL apparatus is able to do or the glitz and glamour of Hollywood is able to do, the fact that Terry, you know, continues to visit Georgia and continues to be on hand for the sort of more homespun style of recruitment that Georgia's famous for. If I'm a Trojan right now, how concerned would I be about all of this?
Hey, Brandon, good morning. I think their apparatus, as you dubbed it, was called the Circle of Victory. Well, I think the Circle of Victory might be a little tepid about seeing him back in Athens. Now, there is some intrigue here a little bit with Justice on Saturday. Like, Georgia's going to host some recruits on Friday, and actually today. And we believe that Justice will be in that group. And there's a little bit of, I guess, intrigue about whether Justice stays over until the weekend. So Justice Terry may be in town for G-Day weekend, but not perhaps for G-Day. Of course, if he decides to stay over and take in all festivities for G-Day, that can only help the Bulldogs. As I wrote, Brandon, I believe this is a recruitment that Georgia can still win and should still win. And I think it's going to be very interesting. I think this is one of those, since we've got greenery in the background, I think this is a visit where Georgia needs to plant the seeds of doubt or just the realization of why he really chose Georgia in the first place. I mean, I always, whenever I see and type USC commit Justice Terry, I think of the many conversations I've had with Justice, and I think of how he was kind of quietly egging on, always talking to Elijah Griffin about coming with him to Athens and joining him at Georgia. I don't think those feelings, that those good vibes went away after just one trip out to Cali, especially for a homegrown Georgia boy like Justice Terry. So I think there's a long ways to go in that one. Brandon, I think we've officially reached spoiled status where I've gotten some comments from social media and on Dog Nation forum channels and also on Hedges, I believe, on Wednesday, where Jordan Carter, 5-star out of Douglas County, is not going to be at G-Day on Saturday. That's some information he updated me with on yesterday. These lists are always very fickle. They're very fluid. A lot of people rush to get them out just to show that they're Johnny on the spot with their reporting. Sometimes I try to hold back because I know these things are bound to change. If I know 30 names that are going to be on G-Day on a Monday, that usually changes to 34, but maybe you've lost 7 and gained 7, something like that, or gained 3. So it'll be very interesting there. But I think the one stickler point you'll probably laugh at was somebody said, oh, we're only getting 6 5-stars in for G-Day right now. What's the problem? I mean, we've officially reached that, like, maybe pinky sipper point of elite national recruiting where people are wondering about the 5-star count not hitting double digits for Georgia's 15th spring practice.
Do you think it's fair? We've talked a lot about Bear Alexander this week, both the initial rumblings that he was going to transfer and then the subsequent, I guess, backtracking on that, remaining at USC. Is it fair for Georgia to point out in a situation like this, of are you sure you want to go there and let Lincoln Riley hold your talent hostage and squander your ability the way that he might be with a guy like Bear Alexander? And I know they've made coaching changes, and there's all kinds of promise about how this time it's going to be different. We're bringing in the guy that coached Aaron Donald. Let me tell you something. Chuck Smith coached Aaron Donald. All right, Chuck Smith's the guy that got Aaron Donald right for the NFL draft. It wasn't anybody else. But the point is, is it fair game if you're Georgia to kind of point out, are you sure you want to do this based on the proofs of concept that exist other places?
I think it's kind of, what is that? There's a part of me that wants to say all is fair and love and NIL wars. But what Georgia does, Brandon, is they've traditionally tried to just accentuate the positives. And there's a phrase like that goes around really well and tracks really well. It's what is understood doesn't really need to be explained. I think Georgia would just accentuate the D-line development, the guys that will be around him. I think there was one point about it, how the aftermath of Justice Terry's flip to USC was an example with, they're going to find a way for me not to be double teamed. And I don't really know if that's what you really want out of a defensive lineman, because if you're really good, you're going to draw a double. But curious statement that was made by a member of Terry's camp. And that was basically just the information they got and the pitch there from USC as well. I seem to remember Aaron Donald drawing a double almost every game when he was a Los Angeles Ram, because that was just what you did with the juggernaut on the offensive line. But yeah, Brent, I'm glad you noticed the background. I'm going to try to set a Dog Nation Daily unofficial record. Maybe the captivating greens of Amen Corner will keep this segment a doodle-free segment during Brandon's Dog Nation Daily guest.
Jeff always gives away a lot of my secrets. I do have a tendency to sort of doodle on. We don't do much of a show sheet around here. We don't have much of a rundown. But I have a tendency to sort of, you know, scribble on here a little bit. For those watching on video, they'll see some of that. Most of this is just sort of little notes for me, but there's also a little bit of, you know, a little scribbling every now and then on that. I talked about Elias Williams a moment ago there as well. Williams, I believe, you've reported, is expected to be there. And I think the Williams recruitment is sort of fascinating for me because I don't think the chatter around this has caught up to the player as of yet. This is, I think, one of the, and by the way, I'm going to apologize to Williams because my graphic doesn't give him full credit. He's a 5-star according to the 24/7 Sports composite. So I shortchanged him a star there. So let me apologize to a Williams there for that. That's my fault. But anyway, in the case of Williams, this is probably the most contested recruitment of any of the current Georgia commits, I would think. And I think there are a lot of people who wonder, you know, can Georgia hold on to Williams? So with him coming back, I think he's a very important player for this class, even though Ethan Barbour is another tight end that I really like as well. I would say a little bit different kind of player. how much does having Williams on Saturday help with what is a pretty significant push from other programs? I think it's the Florida schools in some cases, perhaps NIL aided. How much does having Williams on campus on Saturday give Georgia a chance to quiet some of that down?
I think it's really big. I think it's big that he'll get to see, and Brandon, we all know this, man. G-Days are pass fest, man. There's no inside zone. There's no ISO calls. There's really not a lot of mammoth, you know, line blocking in the trenches. So the ball will be in the air a lot. Elias, who is really one of those prospects, and you're right, Brandon, he's been a five-star since they slotted and rated this class because it's just that obvious, man. Number one tight end in the country. Hartley always works ahead. He's a champion for that. But, like, I think the thing with Hartley is he's going to have to play a lot of defense with Elias Williams. You used to hear a lot of chatter about Florida schools. I think FSU and specifically maybe lost some steam in terms of their chase a little bit. Miami is huge. Miami has, you know, all those advantages besides the lovely beaches of South Beach and everything else to draw in a recruit. So I would say, yeah, you're right. I mean, you do hear some rumblings. People wonder about, hey, is Cadell McGee possibly pry Bo Walker away from this class at running back? But you're right. The most contested commitment, especially most contested public commitment right now of the 2025 class, would certainly be Elias Williams.
Do you buy the – I mean, there is nobody like Darnell Washington. He's a one of one. But do you buy the Darnell comparison a little bit for with Williams and Darnell right now?
I don't think this is a disservice to neither Darnell nor Elias. I think Elias is just a different player. He's a guy that you see him right now, and I can't really see him being that, you know, extra attached tackle that Darnell was so amazing for, but you can certainly see all those leapfrog hurdle plays like the one against Oregon. I think Elias is going to be his own kind of beast. Still a terrific basketball player. He's going to have a little bit more swivel, a little bit more handle going down the field. I mean, really, there's some, I'm sure if you talk about the true flex end type stuff, that's what you would do with a guy like Elias Williams. I mean, a lot of the things that Georgia was going to get eventually when Pierce Sperling III was ready to go, kind of being that, you know, out oversized tight end, like, you know, Jimmy Harrell speaks to my mind right there, the great Seattle, New Orleans type guy.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham. Yeah, thank you for the correction there. But I think that's the type of player that I think Elias can be, really smooth, really silky, and, you know, really kind of like an Antonio Gates for the modern era a little bit.
You know, I love my online chatter, and we've gotten some of that this week for Darren Akinnabon, who certainly seems like maybe trending in a good direction for Georgia here right now. Also, as you've reported, the four-star defensive lineman expected to be in the building on Saturday there as well. Looks like this might be going in a good spot for Georgia here at the moment.
Yeah, Brandon, there's a few guys on this board, this list, that I would say are trending hard for Georgia. And, you know, Travis Smith is one. Darren Akinnabon is one. Dijon Lee Jr. is one. And it's funny, I'm going to classify Darren as a very neat and tidy recruit. And, I mean, it's kind of, you know, seeing Augusta National in the background here, I think it's kind of like a guy that his recruitment's going to feel basically like a bogey-free round. Because he's a young man that basically set this visit, kind of like Travis Smith, months ago. He's held to that. They knew they wanted to be at G-Day back in February, and they're going to be at G-Day. Darren has even claimed Georgia as his leader, touted Georgia as his leader going back months now. And Georgia's still his leader after a visit to Ohio State and other guys jockeying as well. Seems like Chidera Uzodiribe has really identified and prioritized Darren as a guy. He's got all the size. Now, Brandon, if you look at his film, without getting too deep in the weeds here, into the rough, so to speak, or the second cut, what's happening here with Darren is you look at his film, man, he's a guy that's going to set the edge. He's going to check off a lot of traits. He's very athletic. He's going to be able to knife through the line. And yeah, that's a guy that I think that quality gets a little understated when it comes to Georgia and what they like to do with their defensive ends or edge type prospects. I think Nolan Smith was fantastic at that, probably didn't get enough credit for it. And he's another guy, already fits the eye test, really likes the dogs, really taken by the dogs. And I think this will be, Brandon, a very important visit.
Really fun to consider there on that. And obviously the guys that we used to talk about a year ago or so, all of a sudden they get really their first chance to demonstrate what they're all about tomorrow. So in the time we have left, I want to focus on some of these, you know, freshman names here a moment. We started our show today by talking about, you know, Ellis Robinson and K.J. Bolden and guys like that who I think have a real opportunity to kind of vie for some playing time there in the defensive secondary. But if we broaden it out a little bit more than that, who are the freshmen that you would say are kind of most on your mind for exciting debuts and the type of people that we could be buzzing about for a few days to come and on our Dog Nation cruise and all that? Like, you know, who are the freshmen kind of on your mind as we head towards tomorrow?
Yeah, Brandon, man, I know you probably didn't intentionally mean to do this, but you perfectly teed up my upcoming story here on DogNation.com. Right. And what it is let me just challenge everybody listening right now. How well do you know your dogs? Like, if I was to say, without looking at Google or going to GeorgiaDogs.com, tell me who number 18 is going to be tomorrow. Tell me who number 19 is going to be tomorrow. Tell me who number 23. What about number 70? What about number 4 and number 1? You could probably get those last two, but it's kind of fascinating to sit there and look at all those big new numbers. And there's a lot of new numbers. I've got a story that's going to go up today on DogNation.com, which is basically the 24 names you need to know for the new faces you need to know for Georgia football in 2024. Now, listen, folks, these are not going to be 24 biographies or whatever. It's going to be quite simply, you know who number 4 is now? That's not just Oscar Delp on offense. That's K.J. Bolden on defense. Number 18 might be the best new number combination for Georgia football this year, Brandon. That's because Sakobe White's going to wear number 18 on offense. And on defense, Chris Cole's going to wear number 18. Number 23, that's the new tight end, Jaden Riddell. Number 70, that's the new defensive line, crusher. And that's offensive lineman Daniel Calhoun out of Walton High School as well, and Centennial High School as well. So there's a lot of new faces and a lot of new names where I don't want the good people that the good patrons of DogNation.com, I don't want them to stumble around the greens at G-Day tomorrow and go like, wow, who's 70 again? Who's 13 again? Who's number 18 again? What about number 17? Who's that fella? Let me go check that roster. Well, we got you on the pages of DogNation.com today.
How about some of those guys that you're especially interested in seeing?
I'm really interested in seeing like Sakovi, human joysticks, what people are going to start calling him in that Isaiah McKenzie realm right there. It's going to be really hard for number 70, Calhoun, to really show himself, but I think he's making himself into a second-team offensive line guy already after like one spring in Athens. Number 99, Joseph Jonah Ajanye. How about number 94, Xavier McLeod, Brandon? That's the transfer over from South Carolina. He was Mr. Football for South Carolina in the 2022 season, and I think that's really important because he's a guy that came down to South Carolina and Georgia. Maybe didn't choose wisely with his decision, but he got a chance to hit the reset button, and now he's still a redshirt freshman defensive lineman for Georgia. I think Georgia needs him to play very well this season and maybe make that surge sometime around the fall. But, you know, the guys that – in the obvious answers, Brandon, I think most people, if you had to say who are the two or three freshmen you can't wait to see on Saturday, they're going to say number one, Ellis Robinson. I think Ellis is going to play a ton in that game on Saturday. Number 4, K.J. Bolden. We heard Malachi Starks rave about him this week when – see, Peaches gets excited when we talk about those five stars. Because you heard Malachi Starks this week just rave about how KJ's soaking things up like a sponge. That's what gets Peaches barking when we talk about five stars on the Dog Nation daily program. There's a lot of guys that, you know, got to remember 22 enrolled, but there's still six more coming in the class of 2024 that still have to graduate and go through high school. So, you know, there's little players. I can't wait to see how much of an impact a guy like Chris Cole, number 18, is ready to make. There's a lot of guys. And then there's like these subtle number changes, Brandon. I bet as much as you consume Georgia football and know, I bet if I told you, could you go 2 for 2 on who's the new number 7?
I definitely could not. I can go ahead and tell you right now, I am not, especially with this new team, I am not numeric roster, you know, Jeopardy winner. I can promise you I will not be able to do that.
Yeah, and it's funny because Kirby even made the point that like 50 out of the 85 are now 50-something out of the 85 are guys that have been on campus for less than two spring practices now. And like those two numbers right there, and we're here to inform, man. And number 10 is now Damon Wilson Jr. moves from number 35 to number 10.
That one,
that's going to look pretty good. That's going to look pretty
good. That's a good-looking number for him. Yeah, I think 10's a good number for him. That one I did know. I think 10's a fast number. It's a faster number than 35 is. You just move quicker when you wear that number. I don't know why, but you do. So I do like Damon Wilson in 10. I like that.
It looks more sleek. Looks like more pass rusher, fire-breathing dragon coming off the end. And the new number 7, that's Daniel Harris, one that Georgia was able to hold on to coming in and out of the portal. New cornerback that will see a lot of time this year.
Let me do two things with you here real quick, because you mentioned a couple of guys that we probably haven't – I mean, we've talked about them some, but probably didn't want to talk about them more. You know, one of those guys is Daniel Calhoun. I know this is like really into the weeds, totally in the weeds, but I think if you're Georgia, you probably feel – I think you definitely feel like you've got 6 offensive linemen that you have no problem playing. Obviously, Morris and Fairchild, the 2 rotating guards, in addition to the, you know, the other 4 starters. I would say that Monroe Freeling is probably really close to being a 7th offensive lineman that I'm guessing Georgia's pretty confident in. You know, that's my assumption anyway. I think the story for Calhoun is – and I brought this up on a show the other day – I think the story for Calhoun is kind of really being, I would say, that 8th offensive lineman that perhaps gets himself above the line and becomes the guy that Georgia would be okay putting into a game. Of course, you've got a 2 deep, but within that second team offensive line, there's a little separation between some guys and others, where a guy like Freeling, I think, is probably pretty close. And if there was to be something happen, that's a guy that could really emerge. And maybe he will emerge even beyond injury at some point in time this year. And then, you know, Calhoun, because of the sheer size, because of the fact that he sort of plays the game, I think, in a little bit of a nasty way, which is a compliment, of course, that's one of those guys there as well that could really be in that kind of trusted above-the-line group before the season is done. And that level of offensive line depth for Georgia is the sort of luxury, I believe, that separates it from even other championship-contending teams. There are just not very many teams in America that have the sheer number of quality offensive linemen that Georgia seems to have in this program at the moment.
Yeah, Brandon, let me see if I can pull a keeper out of the bag right here. I think you mentioned the number. You thought Georgia could go to 7. Maybe Calhoun could be 8. Brandon, I'm going to say this. I think Georgia is as close to having 10 excellent SEC caliber offensive linemen than they've ever had in Kirby Smart's time. I mean, I'm talking about 10 that you could go to war with and beat an SEC team on the road with. Those that have been around Coach Stacy Searles a lot this spring, they've seen him smiling quite a lot. Like happy, of course, he's coaching him up. He's being a grizzled veteran offensive line coach, but he really, to a lot of observers, feels like he's got a really good group. Maybe perhaps, you know, the one thing is who's probably your second team center. Is that Tate Ratledge in a pinch? Is that Drew Bobo in a pinch? Is that, you know, I think a guy like they have several offensive linemen that are quite versatile, and the depth of what Georgia has on the offensive line. I know everybody's going to be worried a little bit come April 16th and think the Grim Reaper's coming around the corner, but you can bet Georgia's second team offensive line group is going to have to withstand a lot of pressure from other potential inducements from collectives, because you see number 72 right there in that clip right there, Jamal Merriweather, Brandon. That's a guy that people are going to need to know who that number is in red and black pretty soon as well, because he's looked pretty sporty, getting on the weight, learning how to play. I think that was another great evaluation pull for Georgia, how they basically flipped that young man from DSGB territory from Central Florida to Athens, and he's in first spring actually in Athens, but second season with the Dogs, he's coming on. I mean, that offensive line group, Brandon, has always been robust, but to me it seems stronger than ever.
All right, Jeff, good stuff. Looking forward to seeing you in Athens tomorrow. You got your Masters t-shirt on, you got the background, you got a pick for how you think it's going to play out the rest of the weekend there at Augusta?
I mean, I can't wait to see how treacherous this wind is going to be. It was sad to see what Georgia alum Brian Harmon, how he did on the first day dealing with a lot of that wind. But I really think that out of the blue, I hope, Brandon, I just hope this doesn't become the live versus non-live storyline in terms of contenders. You see a guy like Bryson DeChambeau playing the Augusta round of his life already. But that Scheffler dude, man, he looks dialed in, locked in. Brandon, I don't know, in your golf circles, you guys talk about it a lot. Your text threads, your friends, your familiars. What a story it would be if he's leading the Masters. And he has said to himself, to others, anybody that's listening, if he's leading the Masters and his wife, who is very much with child, if she's ready to deliver, he's leaving. He's withdrawing from the tournament. Can you imagine that story? He's going to be Father of the Year for all time. But that, the way he's playing, he looks like he's got the hottest blades in the bag.
It should be a very, very fun weekend indeed. That all around G-Day. And, of course, Braves, Diamond Dogs, everything else going on there as well. So a lot of good sports this time of year. Good stuff, Jeff. We appreciate you being here. Looking forward to seeing you there in Athens tomorrow. That's going to be a good time. We will talk to you soon, Jeff. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
Hey, Brandon, take it easy, man. See you in Athens on Saturday, buddy.
Sounds good.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
One of the other freshmen I was going to mention to Jeff, obviously we could talk about 1,000. We just don't have time to do all of it, but you know, Jeff brought up Sakovi Y. And look, I think there's so much media around Georgia, and every player who comes in the Georgia program gets such a level of hype that they all seem to have the potential. This guy could be a superstar. And I think it's important to note that, look, there's also something to be said for the guys that you're just going to like, right? It's like, you know, is Sakovi Y ever going to be Brock Bowers is going to be a three-time All-American. Sakovi White is a wide receiver, kind of playing the slot. Is going to be a three-time All-American? Well, obviously, history would suggest that's a pretty hard thing to do. But is Sakovi White going to do a lot of things over the course of his Georgia career that makes you very happy to have him on the team? And could some of that be predicted by the way that he perhaps goes out and performs tomorrow? I think in a way it kind of could be. Now, I do think in college football there is still it's still really important to have good dudes on the team. And Sakovi is just a good dude. I've had the opportunity to be around, obviously, his CAS team that he played for in high school a good bit. I love that organization up there. Steve Gates, former Dog, by the way, football player, is the coach there. He does a great job. And, you know, you get a chance to see Sakovi on both sides of the ball there as a high school player, and you just realize that he just plays the game the right way. And in this day and age of players who get a lot of glamour and players who seek a lot of glory, there is still something to be said for, like, just being a player who loves the game. And I believe that's what Sakovi is. And I think that there's going to be a lot to like about Sakovi White. It may not be like the Ellis Robinson level or what you sort of think of as, like, what a guy like Brock Bowers achieved during his career. Or, you know, it's not necessarily like, oh, this is the five-star, you know, who's about to be, you know, the hottest name in the sport. It may not necessarily be that. But boy, you want those guys who are making positive contributions to the team. And for as long as Sakovi White's here, my belief is that's what a guy like that's going to be able to do, and also have a chance to be a really good football player in his own right there as well. Now, let's get ready to go cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, this is the point where I'm going to kind of put this out into the atmosphere here a little bit. Obviously, back in January, I was really very privileged to be among the first to be on the newest Royal Caribbean cruise ship at the time, Icon of the Seas. And as I think ahead to what's about to take place in July, I'm really kind of hoping that I also maybe get a chance. Maybe. We never know. You know, and, you know, obviously, all of this is, you know, we'll just have to see how it goes. But wouldn't it be great if I could come back and do my job well by telling all of you, kind of from a first-person perspective, what it's like to be on board the newest Royal Caribbean cruise ship that's about to debut? And of course, I'm talking about Utopia of the Seas. This thing hitting in July, and the whole act of building a ship I find to be amazing. It's hard to believe that humans can even do this. And yet, in the case of Utopia of the Seas, did you know this? They're actually completing this a little bit sooner than they had planned to do. So it was originally going to sail in whatever time in July, and I believe they've actually moved up the first sailing a little bit sooner than it was originally supposed to be, because they got the ship done a little sooner than they thought they might, which just gives you an idea of just how much care Royal Caribbean takes to make this experience as great as it can be for those who get a chance to be on board Utopia of the Seas. And how much fun is that going to be? And what I love about Utopia is it's an Oasis class ship, which is obviously really cool, but it's also going to be a situation where, in the case of Utopia, it's going to be a brand new ship, Oasis-class ship, and it's going to be kind of dedicated to those 3- and 4-night sailings there at Port Canaveral, which I think is wonderful, because you're talking about an experience where, if you're like me, you get a family and everybody's got stuff going on. It's sometimes, while you would love to go on a 7-night cruise, it's not always easy to do that. So the 3- and 4-night cruises sometimes can be a little bit better for the schedule. For some people, it's perhaps a, you know, a more wallet-friendly choice or something along those lines, because the shorter cruise can be. Well, either way, how about the idea that the brand new ship, the newest ship from Royal Caribbean, is going to be there for those 3- and 4-night sailings out of Port Canaveral? Great time to take a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. Jessica Slater can help you with that. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater at dreamvacations.com. She'll tell you all you need to know about all of that. All right, couple of stories for you here right now. So yesterday, we saw one of these great classic SEC soap operas sort of play itself out. And some of you aren't quite as into basketball as you are into football, and I understand why that would be. But I can promise you, the stuff involving the Kentucky basketball coaching search is just as good as anything we've seen from the football side of things in quite some time. Really very entertaining, where Kentucky has now settled on a former player, and for what it's worth, former UGA staffer, Mark Pope, as its new coach. Pope, most recently at BYU. And this is, from a perception standpoint, a huge step down from trying to steal Danny Hurley from UConn or going after Nate Oates from Alabama. Settling on Mark Pope really feels like a loss for Kentucky. Now, there's a chance that Pope ends up being a good coach. Obviously, that's possible. But in terms of winning the press conference, which is seemingly always a goal, that doesn't really do this. And behind the scenes, what seems to be true is that after offering a ton of money to Danny Hurley and him not wanting it, you know, kind of getting rejected by Nate Oates, it seems like and I guess Scott Drew as well, the Baylor coach, who probably from a personality standpoint didn't feel like he was a good fit for Kentucky, you're led to believe, perhaps. But big coaches turning the job down, there was perhaps a little bit of panic there in Lexington. The other big name that was potentially out there was Billy Donovan, the former Florida coach who won back-to-back championships, who's now with the Chicago Bulls. He's head coach there. And so, like, the last sort of Hail Mary attempt of, can we do something to sort of salvage all of this, would have been Donovan. But apparently, according to reporting, and there's some, I guess, you know, pretty well-sourced reporting coming out of Lexington on this, Donovan didn't want to get involved with this job discussion until after the bull season came to an end, which is obviously still a few weeks away. So would have been willing to have the talk, but didn't want to do it until he was kind of done coaching the Bulls here this year. In other words, he was going to be interested in some very high-level negotiations if he was going to go to Kentucky and be a part of that pressure cooker there and get back involved in college basketball, something he was more than happy to leave a few years ago when he moved on from Florida. So I think if you talk to some people around the Kentucky program, what they'll tell you is, listen, if Donovan said no, you could have still hired Mark Pope. You could have gone and gotten him at any point in time you wanted to, A, because nobody else was going to, and B, this is your own guy. Why not swing for the fences and try to go get Donovan? And I guess I probably think that's probably would have been the wisest course of action there as well. And look, here's the number one takeaway in all of this. I think in college athletics, football, basketball, both, I think that ADs and the media around these programs, I think we make too big of a deal when a program gets turned down for a job and it turns into it's a bad look. That's always the phrase here. It's a bad look. And what I always want to say when somebody says anything for a program is a bad look, like specifically, what does that mean? What is the specific meaning of a bad look? And what is the specific negative ramifications of any kind of bad PR hit, being turned down by a coach or whatever else is out there? I think the people who make public relations into a big deal are the people who personally benefit from public relations. And that if you're in charge of the organization, I think you're better suited to just say, no matter what the issue is, in this case, it's hiring a coach, PR doesn't exist. That a bad look or bad PR or anything like that, that's just a PR department trying to justify their, you know, their position. But the actual PR itself is not a thing that you have to worry about. Case in point, Alabama. When Nick Saban was hired as Alabama football coach, that only happened after Rich Rodriguez had turned the job down. And frankly, after Nick Saban himself at one point in time at least alluded to the fact that he wasn't going to take the job, which would seemingly be proof that being turned down is not always necessarily a bad thing. So if the thought of hiring Pope, which may be a coach beneath the standard that Kentucky should be pursuing, is all about the panic that comes in when you've been turned down for the job and gotten the criticism of, ooh, bad look for Kentucky, nobody wants this job, all of that kind of stuff is always overstated. So if Mitch Barnhart settled for a bad coach because he was worried about being turned down, then that's ultimately going to be the first line of his Wikipedia page when he eventually gets fired. He's not very popular in Lexington right now as it is. And this is the hire that could doom him forever, unless Pope ends up being better than some people think that he might. A couple of other things here. Jeff mentioned, so we're all about G-Day on Saturday, but This time a year ago, there were some transfer rumblings for Georgia on the day of the game. We'll see if that ends up happening tomorrow or not. But we do know that Georgia, just like everybody else, will be a factor in the portal when it opens on April 15th. You know, you've heard, what is it? Is it, what's his name from 24/7? It's like, oh, these teams are, some teams are going to be gutted during the portal. Perhaps they might. Yeah, I guess I'm still at least somewhat skeptical that it is as bad and as dramatic as some people suggest that it might be for a couple of various reasons. A, it's a shorter portal than the winter portal is. And also, you're talking about a pretty short time frame in terms of, you know, I guess establishing yourself at the new place that you go. There will clearly be some big names, but if that's the case this year, that's different than the previous portals have been. Perhaps all of this gets fueled by the fact that they're not going to really enforce the one-time transfer rule anymore. Maybe that makes it a little bit of a bigger deal. But I guess I'm sort of expecting it to be a big deal, but perhaps not quite as apocalyptic as some have suggested it might be. And we'll tune in to see if I end up being wrong about that. And then, of course, spring games tomorrow. We're watching closely what happens for G-Day, but also watching around the rest of the SEC there as well. I got a whole bunch of those games right there at 1 p.m. Alabama, the Kalen DeBoer debut going to be taking place. Watching the Alabama wide receiver situation could be a little bit interesting there because they've obviously got a real need to sort of reboot there at that spot. Seeing what happens, the Florida game for the quarterbacks could be pretty interesting there too. So you got a lot of spring games tomorrow in addition to what goes on for a G-Day. So we'll come back on Monday and recap a good bit of that. But for now, we'll make it cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. I'll also give a quick shout-out to our friends at Mr. Electric, Dog Nation's choice for residential and commercial electrical needs. And so when you reach out to our friends at Mr. Electric, they're going to come out to you and do really quality repair work and take good care of you for installations or anything else you might need. They've been doing that for nearly 30 years right here in our market areas. I want you to check out Mr. Electric today. They got a team of licensed experts. They got insured electricians. They're taking safety very, very seriously. They also offer some flat rate upfront pricing for you there as well. So if you need 24-hour emergency service or you just need a quote for some work you want to get done in the future, Mr. Electric's got you covered. And there's always going to be a situation where you get that $29 service fee waived anytime you get some repair work done. So that's always a really cool thing there as well. Mr. Electric is a neighborly company. That's why you're going to enjoy working with them. So find them online, MrElectricAtlanta.com. That's MrElectricAtlanta.com for more on that today. All right, speaking of Augusta National and the Masters, we will wrap up with a little bit of an update on our Golden Shoe Masters pool. And I'm going to show you the top three here because that's all I can fit on the screen here right now. Some pretty clever team names in our group here as well. Coming in at number three is Dog Tricks. He is a total of 11 under. His team, a total of 11 under par there. This is, by the way, not current. This is through round one, which concluded yesterday. So Dog Tricks, third right now, 11 under par. Homa Land Security, which is obviously a play on Max Homa's name, and Max Homa, one of his top guys there. Homa Land Security coming in at number two at 12. Actually, that's a tie for the first place spot between Homa Land Security. And then Eddie's Blindfold, in honor of our Eddie the Blind Squirrel here, also at 12 under par there as well. All three of the top teams enjoying Scotty Scheffler right now, as you might expect. So pretty interesting stuff, and a lot of UGA guys in the mix there on that too. So we'll continue to update that and come back and award the winner there on Monday. Really fun group of folks being a part of our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. I should say Golden Shoe Masters Pool, so we'll keep our eye on all of that. Lousy stinking Gators, about 1,252 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. That is our Gatorator Updater. Y'all have a great day. I'll see you tomorrow in Athens. Come by and see us at the UGA Bookstore back here Monday for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll look forward to talking to you then.